Welcome to Shattering This, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those of you who have come to realize that the world's religious, political, economic, and media institutions are corrupt, and to those who are finally coming to see that so are the world's military institutions, that they're all counterproductive. They don't serve any purpose. In fact, they actually work against our interest, including the military, and that the issues that plague them cannot be resolved. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, if you'd like to disagree with the host, I am Yada, you're welcome to call us toll-free, 877-300-7645. Reuters is reporting that reports of a $500 million Washington aid package to Pakistan and a period of intense border shelling events in Kashmir, which would be the Pakistanis shelling Kashmir, have overshadowed the run-up to U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry's expected visits to South Asia over the next few days. Kerry is due to attend an investment summit promoted by Indian Prime Minister Modi at the over the weekend. The media reports say that he will then travel to the heart of darkness. Islam is bad. President Barack Hussein Obama will make a second trip to India later in the month, seeking to strengthen ties between the world's two largest democracies. Well, in actuality, neither India nor the United States is a democracy, not even remotely close to a democracy. The United States is a republic. It is a failing republic in that it is no longer the rule of law. It used to be the rule of law, and therefore elected individuals legislated, which is a republic. But there is no democracy in the world today, and democracies are inherently evil. They are tyranny of the majority, or of the majority over the minority. And the only two democracies that the world has ever known are the Delian League and Sparta. One was compelled choice, where the Greeks basically said, you either join our democratic union as a defense pact against the Persians, or we will attack you and compel you. That's not much about freedom, is it? And the longest-lived democracy was Sparta, which was among, if not the most evil regimes in the history of humankind. So democracy is not something we should strive for, and even the democracies that existed within the Delian League in Sparta, the only reason that they endured over any prolonged period of time is they were actually oligarchies. Because a democracy whereby everyone is allowed a voice never works. The only chance that a democracy has is if those making the decisions as to what a state will do in terms of its raising of funds, its spending of those funds, and its overall business is made by those who have an investment, who are net contributors to the state. When those who are net beneficiaries of the state vote, it's almost always legalized armed robbery, and the state fails. So the United States and India are not among the world's largest democracies. They neither is a democracy. And we can't strengthen the ties between the United States and India because they are trashed. The United States has no favorable ties to India. The fact is that the United States, in aiding and providing military aid to Pakistan, which is an avowed enemy of India, and who has routinely sponsored terrorist attacks in India, and who routinely attacks and shells Kashmir, is aiding and abetting their most lethal foe. So the Indians are no friend of America because America is aiding and abetting and arming and equipping their primary enemy. And the United States had a conniption fit over India's development of nuclear weapons, and yet we turned a blind eye when Pakistan developed their nuclear arsenal. So we have no credibility in India. Despite Modi and Obama's well-publicized chemistry at talks in Washington last year, and well-publicized chemistry is that they don't get along at all. Renewed friction between South Africa's nuclear-armed neighbors is a reminder of underlying anger in New Delhi at U.S. support of its arch rival. Pakistan is not a rival of India. Pakistan is a blight on the face of the earth. Pakistan is the world's largest state sponsor of terrorism. Pakistan is amongst the most evil nations on the planet. Pakistan's military is the primary supporter of the Taliban. And so America is aiding and abetting a blight. And it's not as if Pakistan and India compete. They don't. India simply wants to live free and safe. And Pakistan is, like all Islamic states, is into jihad, into terrorism, into killing. And so this is not a rivalry. It's a ridiculous presentation of the difference between these nations. The article says, and this is a quote, "This may be a bit of a sobering moment for those who thought we might see a blooming of the relationship," said Harsh Pant, professor of international relations at King College in London. Why would he say that? I mean, the very presidency of Modi is an affront to the United States. I mean, he ran on the basis of the United States is no friend of India. So why would you think that there's going to be a blooming of the relationship, particularly when the United States is providing so much weaponry to Pakistan? Well, Pakistan has fought three wars against India since independence in 1947. Now, this reads, India and Pakistan have fought three wars. Well, Pakistan has attacked India three times. And the fact is that India earned its independence from Great Britain. But the Muslims in India said they couldn't live in a society where the majority of the population was Hindu, and they had to dominate. They had to have their own country where Islam prevailed. And the reason that Pakistan is a state sponsor of terror, the reason that Pakistan is such a broken state at this moment, is for that very reason, that it is exclusively Islamic. And it broke away from India, and then it has fought wars over the territory that divides the two countries. So Pakistan's military and government is a constant irritant in New Delhi, where Kerry is widely seen as pro-Pakistani, and he is. So is the Obaminator, which is despicable since India is actually a country that is reasonable in terms of its international relations. India does not sponsor state terrorism. India does not torment rival religious sects. India does not invade foreign countries. Pakistan does all of these things. Pakistan announced last week that U.S. ambassador had said a request had been made to Congress for $532 million aid payment under a co-authored bill by Kerry in 2009. Washington denied that on Monday, but not before drawing India's ire. How the government of the United States of America decides to spend U.S. taxpayer money is entirely its prerogative, foreign minister spokesman said in a statement. However, India does not believe that Pakistan is showing sustained commitment against Islamist militants. Of course not. It sponsors the Taliban. It sponsors every Islamic terrorist organization within Pakistan is actually sponsored and supported and directed by the Pakistani military. The State Department spokesperson, Jen Paskey, who is a real witch, said that no request had been made to the U.S. Congress for payment under the act, which requires Pakistan to cease support for extremist groups such as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. You see how that was stated? It wasn't that requires Pakistan to confront, to eliminate, to work against extremist groups, and by the way, they're not extremists, they're fundamentalist groups, such as the Taliban and Al-Qaeda. And by the way, Al-Qaeda doesn't exist anymore. Which means that they are currently and have been supporting them. So to cease support means that they have and are currently supporting them. So this notion that Pakistan is somehow engaged in the war against Islamic terrorism is nonsense when even the State Department acknowledges they are a supporter of the Taliban. And here it says, and Al-Qaeda. However, she said that other funds were available to Pakistan. So this is simply the State Department's shell game. That's not true that we're giving them $500 million under that act. But, you know, we're giving them $500 million under a different line item. Because the more that we operate under the cover of darkness, the less Americans know about what we're doing with their money, the better it is for us. In 2009, under the Kerry-authored Act, the United States agreed to give an annual payment of $1.5 billion to Pakistan, and by the way, it's almost all military aid, and in 2013 handed over the cash under a waiver, despite what critics says was a lack of progress countering Islamist militancy. As a matter of fact, Pakistan, every time that the United States would try to engage Pakistan in joint maneuvers, they always warned the Taliban that the maneuver was taking place. They actually provided intelligence to the Taliban so that the United States' efforts against them would fail. The Pakistani government is on the side of the Taliban. The Taliban works for them. Don't ever lose sight of that. Funding for 2014 and the last year of the four-year plan has not yet been released. We'll return in a moment. This article says that Washington has been trying to encourage a rapprochement between India and Pakistan. Funny how that works. You supply a country with $1.5 billion worth of your most advanced weapons every year, and they are the principal tormentor of India. And you say that you're working towards peace between the two countries. You know, nothing says peace than arming a belligerent in a conflict. I mean, that's just why our rhetoric is just so hypocritical. I mean, here we're pretending that we're trying to get peace between Pakistan and India, and we're providing the majority of India's military budget, or excuse me, Pakistan's military budget. And the Pakistan's military budget is spent to a large degree in harassing India. Well, this article then says that relations were badly damaged in 2008 when a group of Pakistani militants, these would be Islamic militants, killed 166 people in a three-day rampage through the Indian city of Mumbai. And that group was a state-sponsored group. I mean, all of the intelligence on that attack in Mumbai by the Pakistani Islamic organization showed that the Pakistani ISI, which is their version of the CIA, and the Pakistani army sponsored the attack, coordinated the attack, trained the belligerents in the attack, provided the intelligence for the attack. And not only do we know that the Pakistani government was engaged in this terrorist attack against India, the chief architect of the attack actually worked for the CIA. He was a known terrorist, and he was known to have been planning the attack by James Clapper, who was with the FBI at the time. He is now head of U.S. Security. It is amazing that an individual who had foreknowledge of that attack, that terrorist attack, where 166 people were murdered by the Pakistani government through a Pakistani Islamist group, was not fired, but instead has been promoted. He's the same man that lied to Congress under oath, saying that the NSA wasn't spying on Americans. Politicians and celebrities in Germany, as we move to the next story, have joined a media campaign against Pegida, a group protesting against what it sees is the Islamization of Europe. Yet it's amazing how politicians and celebrities are so universally moronic, so universally cowardly, so universally merciless, so universally wrong, so universally deadly and deceitful in this regard. Not one of them understands that Islam is a criminal enterprise. And if they were to simply read the Quran and Hadith, if they were to examine Islamic history, they would recognize that Islam was born as a criminal enterprise for the express purpose of terrorizing, of raiding, and of robbing, of enslaving, and of kidnapping civilians. Stealing their lives, stealing their property, enslaving them. That's how Islam was born. And it's not a question of degrees. That's 100% of what Islam did in its first 10 years under Muhammad's control. Its first official act was a terrorist raid against civilians, where civilians were murdered, civilians were robbed, civilians were terrorized. They were beheaded, they were mutilated, they were kidnapped, they were ransomed, their possessions stolen. This was Muhammad's first official act. It's not a question as to whether it occurred. It's not only detailed in the Hadith, which is the basis of Islam and the basis of Sharia law. It's all we know about Muhammad. But it's also glorified in the Quran's 8th surah, which is dedicated entirely to this terrorist raid. Islam was born as a criminal enterprise. It remains a criminal enterprise. To speak on behalf of it makes the politicians and the media in Germany accomplices in terrorism, accomplices in mass murder, accomplices as it relates to the beheadings, to the decapitations of innocent people. It makes them accomplices in the mutilation of little girls and their genitals. It makes them accomplices in the abuse and the rape of women worldwide. They're reprehensible. So, former Chancellor Helmut Schmidt and retired footballer Oliver Birkhoff are among the 80 figures to back a petition in the German newspaper Bild. And so what does a footballer and a former chancellor know about Islam? Are they experts in Islam? Have they studied Muhammad's putrid life? Are they aware that Muhammad said, "I become victorious with terror"? Do they know that Islam was born out of a terrorist raid? That the 8th surah of the Quran was given to legalize criminal activity, saying stealing is lawful and good? Are they aware of that? Are they just being stupid? Immoral. And I'm going to tell you, when you're aiding and abetting a criminal enterprise, you're immoral. You're reprehensible. Some 18,000 people attended one anti-immigration rally in Dresden on Monday. 18,000 people. Now, I can't tell you that a significant portion or even the majority of those 18,000 people, whether or not they were properly guided in their actions. And you can be opposed to something for the wrong reasons. and you can be opposed to something for the right reasons. So I don't want to throw my support behind the protests while recognizing that the protests are highly desirable and highly appropriate. And the reason is that unless you know the motivations, the reasons behind the protest, you know, if it's like in the United States where we have so many people that are all up in arms that Mexicans are flooding into the United States and that's their primary issue, you know, there's an easy fix for that. And so I don't ever speak on the border crossing issue. The easy fix for that is to eliminate the federal income tax and state income taxes and to replace them with a value-added tax so that when you buy your groceries, when you buy products, everybody pays their fair share. You pay a tax on what you buy, and if you do that, then everybody is contributing to schools, everybody is contributing to health care, everybody is contributing to the fire and police department. No one's getting a free ride. And if you're, and the second thing you need to do is to either completely eliminate or to change the rules in terms of government handouts, like food stamps can't be afforded anyone unless they have been a citizen for more than a decade. That welfare and other kinds of assistance are not afforded anyone unless they have been a citizen for a prolonged period of time, and that Social Security is never given in an amount that exceeds what the individual contributed. So there are ways of fixing the economic influence of it. But in the case of Germany, if it's we don't like them because they're different, if there's people that are just racist, as Germans have had a propensity to be racist and discriminatory based on race, then that's a problem, that I would not support the protests. But if their protests are being led by and are being attended by those who have become aware that Islam is responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist acts, that Islam motivates parents to sexually mutilate their children, that Islam enslaves women, turns them into sex slaves, gives women no rights whatsoever, that Islam is responsible for most of the wars being fought today between rival Islamic sects, that Islam was born as a criminal enterprise, that it remains a criminal enterprise, that it sponsors and encourages decapitation, mutilation, mass murder, terrorism, thievery, the sex slavery, kidnapping, you name it. It's so bad that Islam, compared to the mafia, makes the mafia look like a charity organization. So if you're opposed to Islam because the religion is obviously false, because Allah was modeled after Satan, because Muhammad, its lone prophet, was amongst the most perverted and disgusting people to have ever lived, since it is a blight on the planet, and that everything that Islam touches, it corrupts, it destroys, then by all means, protest the religion. There have been weekly protests by the patriotic Europeans against the Islamization of the West, and that is how you get the name Pegida since October. But counter-demonstrations, and by the way, this idea of patriotism is wrong. So if your motivation is patriotism, is our nation is better, our race is better, our way of life is better, we are superior, patriotism, nationalism, if that is your motivation, then I do not support the protests. I certainly do not support the protesters. Now, if it is Islamization and your focus is on all of the things that are horrific and criminal about the religion and deadly and destructive about the religion, then by all means, protest. Counter demonstrations have sprung up with thousands marching in Berlin, Cologne, Dresden, and Stuttgart. Figures joining the Bild appeal to no to xenophobia. There's no phobia here, folks. This isn't about phobia, and it really pisses me off when you have liberal morons speak of homophobia and Islamophobia, because phobia means fear. And there is absolutely no fear of Islam. It is disgusting. It's moronic. It's disgust. It's despising it. It's loathing it. It's viewing it as reprehensible. It's not fearing it. It's recognizing it for what it is, for its destructive influence, deadly influence, deceitful influence, demonic influence on the world. And so to turn to phobia says that we don't have an argument. So we're just going to use a slogan. And yes, to diversity and tolerance. What do they want to tolerate? They want to tolerate a religion that's responsible for 99% of the world's terrorist acts. They want to tolerate a religion that treats women as sex slaves. They want to tolerate a religion that provides no rights to women. They want to tolerate a religion that's responsible for decapitations. They want, and that encourages it. They want to sponsor and tolerate a religion born out of a criminal enterprise. What in the hell do they want to be tolerant of? Why would you want to be tolerant of these despicable, merciless things? When you tolerate that which is evil and deadly, it is an unforgivable sin. That's the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone. Says that when people lift up, when they tolerate, when they advance that which is deceitful and deadly in my name, that it is unforgivable. So understand, all of you in Europe who would tolerate, who would embrace, who would advance Islam, what you're doing is unforgivable. It's reprehensible. It's not those who are protesting against Islam that are acting in the reprehensible way, or in an unenlightened way, or an uncivilized way. It's those who are embracing, uplifting, advancing, accepting the religion, who are acting in a merciless way, who are actually aiding and abetting a criminal enterprise. This says that Pegida appeals to hollow prejudices. No, it doesn't. To xenophobia and intolerance. We ought to be intolerant of evil. There is no xenophobia. And the fact is that the moment you cease being discerning, the moment you show no prejudice against evil, then you cease to be moral. I mean, that's the problem with political correctness. It's opposed to exercising good judgment. And the moment you cease to be discerning, the moment you cease to being discriminating between that which is productive and that which is counterproductive, that which is beneficial and that which is hostile to people's interests, that which is merciful and that which is deadly. The moment you stop being discerning, the moment you stop using information and reason to oppose those things that are counterproductive, then you cease to be moral. And that's the problem of those who are speaking against the protesters, those who are embracing the religion of Islam, those who want to accept the religion of Islam. They are immoral. It is that simple, folks. You cannot be moral when you accept, when you tolerate that which is immoral. There are very few things on earth today as resolutely immoral, as criminal, as deadly, as destructive, as deceitful as Islam. I'm not sure there is anything on planet Earth today as destructive, as deadly, as deceitful, as criminal, as immoral as Islam. And when you tolerate it, when you advance it, then you're aiding and abetting a plague. You're being reprehensibly immoral. This is a quote. It took a look at our past in economic sense tells us that Germany should not spurn refugees and asylum seekers. Why are they seeking asylum from Islamic countries? Why don't you ask yourself that, former Chancellor Gerald Schroeder? Why don't you ask yourself, why are there so many asylum seekers from Islamic countries? Why do people want to flee Somalia? Why do they want to flee Yemen? Why do they want to flee Syria? Why do they want to flee Iraq? Why do they want to flee Egypt? Why do they want to flee Libya? Why are there so many Muslim asylum seekers in Chad and Nigeria? What is the common denominator that's creating the hellish conditions that they're trying to flee? Ah, the very thing that you're importing into your country, Islam. But of course, you'd have to be informed, you'd have to be rational to figure that out. Something that former Chancellor Gerald Schroeder doesn't seem capable of being. We'll continue to this with this story when Shattering Myths continues after the break. In Cologne, Germany, the authorities, I despise authority, particularly civilian and military authority, religious authority as well, switched off the lights of the city's cathedral as a way of warning Pegida supporters that they were supporting extremists. No, it's actually the cathedral that's supporting extremists. It's the politicians that are supporting extremists. It's the celebrities that are supporting extremists. The extreme behavior, beheadings, female genital mutilation of little girls, selling girls as sex slaves, wanton acts of terrorism, the extreme behavior is being perpetrated by the Muslims, not those who are protesting. They're flooding into Europe. We don't think of it as a protest, but we would like to make the many conservative Christians who support Pegida think about what they're doing, the dean of the cathedral said. Yeah, I just like, maybe the clerics could think about what they're doing. Think that Islam has declared war on Christianity. The Quran announces it as such. Islam has declared war on Jews and says as much. And so, according to the Christian pastor, the Christian dean of the cathedral, that what we should do is we should tolerate, we should accept, we should endorse, we should welcome those who have declared war on us. And you don't have anybody in the media saying, isn't that suicidal? Much of the city center was also plunged into darkness as lights were switched off at major buildings and bridges across the Rhine. Today there is really a democratic sign being sent, and a lot of people in Cologne are expressing their opinion, said Mayor Jürgen Roters. They want to stress that we here in Cologne do not want to have anything to do with the right-wing extremists and xenophobic people. Wow. So the politicians are speaking against those who are intolerant of evil. Now, that would mean that they're speaking on behalf of evil. In Dresden, carmaker Volkswagen said it's also keeping its manufacturing plant dark to show that the company stands for an open, free, and democratic society. Open society. So it doesn't care that if it's going to be open, that's like having an open home. So with an open home, you would not discern, you would not discriminate against an axe murderer, a man with the bubonic plague, a thief. All would be welcome. Someone whose religion says that it's legal for them to steal from you, someone whose religion tells them that it's glorious for them to decapitate you and your children, someone whose religion says that it is acceptable for them to rape your daughter, is welcome into your open home. you know, I'm sad that a business enterprise like Volkswagen would fall to the level that it, too, would support this criminal enterprise. And it speaks of freedom. So after open, it says free. But there is no freedom in Islam. That's the whole concept of Islam. Islam means surrender and submission. It's the antithesis of freedom. There has never been and never will be freedom in Islam. If you want freedom, you have to be opposed to Islam's submission. So once again, the management of Volkswagen has it wrong. As for democratic, there is no democratic society anywhere in the world today. Once again, the management of Volkswagen has it wrong. In Dresden, the chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, attacked the movement in her New Year speech, saying its leaders have prejudice, coldness, and hatred in their hearts. Actually, the hatred exists in the hearts of Muslims. They hate non-Muslims. They hate Muslims who are different than them. They hate. The Quran is a book of hate. And to be prejudiced is a very good thing. You don't hear in these protests people saying, we're against Arabs. They're not saying we're against Africans. They're not saying that we're against Indonesians. They're not saying that they're against Orientals. This is not about racial prejudice. This is about discriminating, being aware that Islam is criminal, that it's evil.